Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Young Lads Podcast, episode 6. Already, Peter DeFee Jr. alongside Harris Eisenberg. A little bit of a late night podcast as we were trying to do this earlier in the afternoon, but we had some technical difficulties. So hopefully that's not the case, because I try to do it out of my living room, at least record this podcast. Now I'm back in my bedroom, as you can see, with all my Legos and, you know, stuff like that. I'm obviously in a 12-year-old's bedroom. But Harris, a lot to talk about, as we have all but one of the super regionals defined at, or that's a bad word to use, but we know all of the super regionals except for one, because we're still awaiting the score, or the final score, I should say, of Stanford and Texas A&M. Right now, Stanford's leading 4-1, and if the winner of that regional will go on to face Texas in that super. So, but first, we got to talk a little bit about the regionals before we go on to the super regionals. And I know you want to really talk about Wake Forest and just the domination that they put out this last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we can keep it quick because we kind of, I guess it's kind of getting old at this point, but they're just destroying everybody. It's like sad, but kind of fun to watch at the same time, too. They outscored opponents in the three games that they played, 48-7. They gave up 6 of those runs against Maryland in the second game. They're healthy. Adam Ciciri, back in the lineup, hits a homer game one. Gets the day off. Let's Danny Corona get back in there. He hits a homer. Not only does Danny Corona hit a homer in game two, but he hits 2 homers in game three. By the way, preview for Young Lad of the Week could be my pick, possibly. Danny Corona, 4-for-8 in the 2 games he played with 3 bombs and 10 RBIs. I mean, does it get any better for a guy who nobody knew if this guy would have a role on the team this year? Is coming through big time when Wake needed an extra DH because Ciciri went down. Now you have both those guys back in the lineup. I mean, you can pick and choose whoever you want. And what was amazing to me was that Wake kind of played this regional so casually, to the point where Rhett Lauder didn't even start the first game. He didn't even need to. Seth Keener started. He struck out 13 over 7 innings, and the 13 Ks are a career high for him. And Rhett Lauder was so good in game two. He made 2 mistakes, both got hit out of the ballpark, but, you know, that's what happens when you throw a lot of strikes. And also, can we just say, Wake after dark, Deeks after dark, I think they were calling it, Saturday night, game gets played at 10:45. You got Wake men's basketball coach Steve Forbes in the locker room yelling into a camera with the boys fired up. I mean, that got me going big time. And what do? They destroy Maryland 21-6. I mean, that's how amazing that was. And then, you know, look, George Mason had a good run in the A-10, but, you know, there just is no one can beat Wake Forest. I think they proved that in this regional that there is no pitching staff that can come in their way. Now, they did avoid Northeastern, who has the second best ERA in the country, because Northeastern lost both the games they played in. But yeah, I mean, this Wake Forest offense is just unbelievable. And they were doing it, you know, without the common names. You know, Brock Wilkin was, I don't want to say an afterthought in the series, but Justin Johnson was a stud in the series. So was Nick Kurtz. I mean, you had all these guys come through, and we're just waiting for the Beast and Brock Wilkin to come out. And, you know, maybe it's time to wait for the Super Regional for it to come out. So just a great start for the Deeks, and want to know your thoughts. I mean, is there a pitching staff that can combat this offense? Because you go play Alabama now, and you host, and Alabama's known for their offense, not known very much for their pitching.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it too. Rhett Lauder threw 95 strikes in his 6 innings. 64 of them were for strikes. So he struck out 11. I mean, I think he solidified himself as a second pitcher taken in this MLB draft. I think Paul Skenes kind of solidified his role as number one guy, striking out, you know, what was it, 11 or 12 in his complete game performance against Tulane. He threw 124 pitches. But this Wake Forest team, I said it last episode, is that I think they are the most complete team. I think you look at their pitching top to bottom, it starts with Rhett Lauder, and he was your second game starter against Maryland. Really, you didn't need him, because without those 2 runs, the pitching staff gives up 4 runs, and you win that game 21-4 instead of 21-6. So really, you know, this could have been a weekend that Wake Forest kind of just rested all their stars. And like you said, Brett Wilkin, you know, was an afterthought. We didn't even talk about him a whole lot because we were talking about Cesario coming back from injury and just having a great regional. And now hopefully during Alabama's regional, they can light it up against this Alabama pitching staff that doesn't have a whole lot of big names.
Yeah, they got a lot of offense. Andrew Pinckney headlines the offense. Ed Johnson is a transfer in from Tennessee Tech. He headlines it as well. But yeah, the pitching, I mean, you look at some of the non-conference games Alabama played it, and you know, some teams scored a lot of runs against the Crimson Tide this year. I mean, heck, the High Point Panthers went to Tuscaloosa, and they put up a six spot through the first three innings. There's a lot of runs for a team that's ranked top 20 in the nation. So, you know, who knows what can happen, but I mean, Sean Sullivan, who's also like, he's your number two starter, they needed to get him inning somehow. So they threw him in a 10-plus run differential in the eighth inning last night in relief of Josh Hartle. I mean, that is how good this Wake Forest team has been. And the 48 runs, if you want to do the math, is 16 runs per game, which is the highest average ever in an NCAA region. So, yeah, they really impressed. And, you know, you mentioned Paul Skeens, how he needed to go game one. You know, I think Skeens and Louder, if you put them in the big leagues right now, I think they'd have no problem finding success.
Yeah, I think they're kind of the same. They have that gravitas that a Lighter with Vandy and Kumar Jack. Rocker. Jack Lighter, thank you. See, we tried to do this earlier in the day, and I was right on top of it. Now,
I mean, you helped me out a lot. You know, we paused, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get a good 18 and shot an 81, and I'm like, all right, I'm rejuvenated.
Oh, there you go. See?
See?
But so they both have the same gravitas as those two guys had being teammates at Vandy. The only thing is that Jack Lighter had a lot of trouble throwing strikes. Now, you can get away with that in college, but in the pros, when you know you're no longer just facing bottom tier competition in regionals, and I don't want to say that to offend any of the teams, but you know, Northeastern can't stack their chips up against Vandy, which I can't really say that now because they lost to Xavier 2-1. But you know, it's a lot easier to have good numbers in college when a lot of kids are 18, 19 years old and just swinging at a lot of things, and they're not 21, 22, 23 spitting on pitches all the time. And that's the thing that's getting Lighter now, and that's why he went from AA immediately with the Texas Rangers after getting drafted by Vandy, or by the Rangers from Vandy, and now he's in Single A because he can't throw strikes, and his ERA, I think, is the last time I looked, it was like a 6 ERA combined in the minors right now. And that's one of the big reasons why a lot of people are calling him a bust right now. But with Louder and Skeens, they throw a lot of strikes. Even I got to look at Skeens again, but we just talked about Louder's day. 95 pitches, 64 of them were strikes. So that's going to help him out a lot more with getting to the big leagues a lot sooner. Because if you could throw strikes, like we were talking about this when we first tried to record this episode, is that Skeens works north and south a lot because he can throw 101. And you were talking about Louder throwing east and west with as much run as he has on his pitches. So if you can work east to west now with a lot of cutting and sinking and diving and dipping, but throw strikes and be around the strike zone to where guys have to take some type of hack at a pitch because they're like, oh, well, that thing's going to dive right into the outer end of the strike zone, and then all of a sudden it's out of the strike zone. That's going to help you a lot in your development.
Yeah, I was actually on the phone with a buddy last night who played collegiate ball, and he said he faced Rhett in summer ball a couple years ago, and he obviously dominated, but nobody knew that he had 16 inches of horizontal break or slide on his fastballs. I mean, that's just crazy to think about.
Yeah, and especially now when you're in the Z break and X break and Y, I think there's a Y break too. I don't know, but you know,
there might be one for all 26 letters for all we know.
There could be, but we worked with Neil Solons, and that's one of his big things, especially when he's talking about Colin Poche's Z break. You know, if you're like negative 20, that means you're getting a lot of run on your fastball. So to see that he has 16 inches of horizontal movement is going to help a lot, because he doesn't throw 97 to 100. He throws 92 to 95. So the more sink you have on your base, on your ball, think about Kyle Hendricks and the type of years that he was having earlier with the Cubs when they won the World Series in 2016, and then in 20, you know, the year before that, getting to the NLCS, he was able to throw an 88 mile an hour sinker. People knew he was throwing an 88 mile an hour sinker, and they couldn't do anything to it. So if you can get a lot of run on your two seam or sinker, whatever he calls it, because I don't know exactly what he calls it, that's going to help you a lot.
And Lauder's velocity went way up in the game against Maryland. I mean, in the ACC tournament against Pitt, he was only sitting 92, 93, maybe touching 94. He was topping out at 97 against Maryland. And again, I don't know if it was because the game started at a quarter or 11 or what, but I mean, still, if you can get that kind of velocity, even at that lower level too, if you have that break, just crazy. But let's go to Skeens for a second in LSU. You know, we discussed, you know, LSU was the number one team for quite a while, and their pitching has really failed them. And the big question going in to the postseason was, were they going to have anybody behind Paul Skeens? And what I asked you was, you know, LSU's so good, they played Tulane in the opening game. Tulane was lucky to be there. They didn't even win 20 games this year. And it was like, do you start Skeens game one knowing that you're facing Tulane? And you brought up a good point. You were like, well, who do they trust? They don't trust anybody else. So Skeens goes out there. He throws, 116 pitches, complete game against Tulane, chucking 101 like usual. And, you know, their guys, you know, finally stepped up for them. You know, Ty Floyd was all right. And Guidry out of the pen was pretty good. Thatcher Hurd also stepped up big time in game two. Which was a big thing for them. They played a couple close games towards the end of that regional. But, LSU was able to pull it off, and they proved at least for now that, you know, they maybe have another guy or two behind Skeens that can get it done, with Skeens still remaining the focal point.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it too, they only beat Tulane 7-2. So are you comfortable putting in that bullpen that today gave up 7 runs against Oregon State after you put up 13 in the first 7, you kind of pucker up in that ninth inning because you're giving up 3 runs. But, you know, they only win 7-2 against Tulane, who we both looked at, you know, we both talked about it last week. We were like, you know, you should be up 13-0 going in the fifth inning and then just giving Skeens, you know, the rest of the night off and then going to somebody and resting up guys for game two. But they only won 7-2. And you use Skeens for that whole entire game. He's going to go game one against, real quick looking at it, they're playing Kentucky. So he's going to go game one against Kentucky, who had a really good regional after falling to Indiana in that first game, came back and won the last two. That pitching staff's really good. I forgot his name already off the top of my head, but the guy that came in and relieved for Kentucky that threw the 90 pitches, I'll have to look it up here real quick after I'm done spewing this, but they got a good pitching staff. And I know their regional had, you know, Ball State and Indiana, who, you know, haven't really been the best offensively, but it had West Virginia, and they were able to take care of business with them. And, you know, only giving up, I think they gave up 4 runs in the last 3 games they played. So, you know, they have a really good pitching staff that's going to be able to neutralize, or at least try to neutralize, guys like Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, Trey Richardson. Oh, no, excuse me. He's on TCU. Trey Morgan of on LSU. So, I was thinking about my young lad of the week. But this is a really good pitching staff that they're going into now, and they're going to need their guys to step up and not just rely on Skeens to get game one, because that's fine. You're up 1-0. Now what do you do for the next 2 games?
And I think the interesting thing with LSU right now is their offense. You mentioned it. You're right. They didn't score as many runs as people thought. There were some situations last night where they had the bases loaded and one out. They couldn't score. Super weird. Tommy White's a little banged up too. And now Jay Johnson has transformed the order to where Dylan Cruz was leading off and Tommy White's hitting second. Because to be fair, at the end of the regular season, the LSU offense was not very good. So, you know, you need your complimentary guys. You need Cade Beloso, who hit a couple homers in the regional. you know, they need him to be a little bit more consistent. Travinsky, their catcher, needs to be a little bit more consistent with the bat. I mean, Dugas right now is either hitting fifth or not playing. So, you know, their offense is a little mixed up. So where the pitching was the concern going in, I'd be a little bit concerned about the offense because we know Kentucky's offense could turn it on. And, you know, as much as Dylan Cruz and Tommy White lead that bunch, you need everybody, you know, and Trey Morgan's a nice player. But, you know, personally, because the lineup has been so bad, you have to hit him third. And Trey Morgan is just so much better hitting one or two than he is hitting three. It's just he gets on base, he steals bases. Cruz and White, you know, they'll get you hits, but on the off chance that they go strikeout, you know, what are you going to do? So, you know, that's kind of the concern there with LSU. But again, I think that'll make up for a really good regional. It's going to start, you know, with how Skeens does.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the pitching staff too, they pitched everybody today. And I'm not saying a 3.74 is bad, but nobody had below a 3.7 that they threw out today. Their starter Cooper had a 5.36, and in 71 pitches, only threw 40 strikes. That's what's going to kill them. If they can't throw strikes, Kentucky's got a good enough offense to where they can string a couple of walks together and then get a base hit here, base hit there, and then all of a sudden everything falls apart because they're trying to piece together this bullpen against Kentucky, and all of a sudden you win the first game maybe that Skeens throws, but then you drop the next two. So, I mean, just the inability to throw strikes and the inability to have faith, I think, is what's going to keep me from not picking them to go to the Supers. I think they're going to – or not to Omaha. I think they're going to go to Omaha. I think they'll beat Kentucky. But I don't – Omaha is Omaha. And you have to have pitching. And you have to be confident in who you're putting on the mound. And looking at their side of the bracket, if they get out of the Supers – they'll be playing either Texas, Stanford, a Wake Forest, an Alabama, or a Tennessee or a Southern Miss. A lot of good offenses on that side, especially if for some reason you get paired up with Wake Forest in game one. Good luck.
Good luck indeed. And Omaha is a very fascinating place. Two more definitely want to get to in depth, and then we can kind of go around the rest of the NCAA. Campbell, a team that we predicted that was going to go pretty far, did not go very far. They lost their first game to an NC State team that they, quite frankly, NC State showed up. They came to play. They got a veteran coach, Elliot Aimvitt. He's won close to 1,000 games. And no matter how young and how underwhelming this NC State team was this year, they're a well-coached group. So they're going to come to play. They came to play. They beat Campbell in game one. And then it was basically, you know, surviving on thin ice at that point. They were down 5-1 to Central Connecticut in the seventh inning, and they got lucky. They hit a grand slam and a couple more homers. They were able to power through, and then they beat NC State. And then after that, they just ran into a juggernaut. You know, South Carolina's hosting for a reason. A lot of people are a little pissed off at this one, too, because Campbell, you know, it was debatable that they should have hosted this regional. And, you know, unfortunately, they're going home. And, you know, you and I discussed it earlier today before we had our technical difficulties. Really came down to a lack of experience in terms of why Campbell was not able to get it done.
And I mean, I remember texting you too on Saturday. I texted you the score was 5-1 Central Connecticut. I was like, well, I guess we were wrong on Campbell. And then all of a sudden, like 10 minutes later, you text me back saying, oh, tying grand slam. And then they outscored Central Connecticut 9-0 after that point. But just their offense clicked in their elimination games. But then against South Carolina, who's got a really good pitching staff, you know, just couldn't get anything going offensively, but you saw what could have made Campbell have some type of a run to get into the Super Regionals with their offense. They beat Central Connecticut 10-5, then they beat NC State 15-1, and then they just, like you said, they just ran into South Carolina. But I think the lack of inexperience, like you said, is what caused them, because it was the same thing that kind of hindered East Carolina's last two Super Regionals when they made it.
And I know their coach was talking about that a little bit when they were doing their coaches' interviews when they played Virginia. I think that's the same thing that kind of hindered Campbell in this regional. And they're losing a lot of key guys next year that they're going to have to try to replace to just make it back to a regional, let alone try to contend for maybe hosting a regional and making it to a super.
It's going to be a lot harder now because they're moving conferences. You know, the Big South, you know, I could talk from experience. Big South's a cakewalk for a team that's ranked. Yeah, it really is. And now you go to a CAA conference, which, you know, they've had a couple representatives in the regional. Northeastern out of the CAA made a regional. UNCW made a regional. It was debatable that Elon could have made a regional this year. So, you know, a lot of good baseball in the CAA. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Campbell goes from here. Cade Keeler's their ace. He's draft eligible. He's likely to go somewhere in the second round, maybe early third round. And, yeah, outside of him, you know, I know Justin Hare always likes to go to the portal, so we'll see what they do. But definitely going to be a challenge for sure for Campbell. But, yeah, I think, you know, we were discussing how excited we were for that Campbell-NC State game, the first one. And, I mean, Geno Groover came to play. I mean, he hits a couple homers, and, you know, this is a guy who was a 1-2 punch with Tommy White last year and with just a little less home run in his bat. And what does he do? He goes out there and hits two bombs. And, you know, leads the pack to a win. Logan Whitaker was good in his, you know, 4 2/3 innings of work. And State, you know, it's kind of similar to Campbell. State wins the first game. They also run into South Carolina at the end. And, you know, it just proved that, you know, South Carolina belonged in a place where, you know, the number one run scoring offense comes into town in Campbell. And people are going crazy about how South Carolina is going to win.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's that's what happened in a lot of these regionals. We were kind of getting excited about, oh, this team could beat this team, and like Dallas Baptist, I thought was gonna get some type of a run, and then they run into Oral Roberts. So it's postseason baseball is one of those things that's where it's just like, all right, well, this should happen, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it was kind of similar to the Terre Haute regional. Nobody thought Indiana State was gonna come out of there. And they did. I mean, North Carolina did not look like North Carolina. I think that's one of the more disappointing teams of this regional. And I know they were without Vance Honeycutt. That's a big loss. I mean, if they had Vance, that dude's a legit center fielder. He's going to get drafted at the end of next year. You know, it could be a little different, but, you know, you got guys who need to step up. Matt Horvath didn't step up, struck out a bunch. Hunter Stokely just didn't have the bat. Jackson Vandebrink was kind of, you know, kind of here or there. Tomas Frick, you know, was having issues. He's their catcher, and their pitching just couldn't get it done. But just briefly, you know, Indiana State wins, and they should, in theory, host the Super, but apparently there's some issues going on at their ballpark, so they will not host the upcoming Super. I don't know who they're playing off the top of my head, but that's a big deal. Like, you go from hosting a regional, you're feeling good, you're in the driver's seat, you're like, okay, like, we're going to be here until Omaha. And now you get the news hit that you're not hosting the regional. And we've seen it, Peter. You know, you go to a place like Wake Forest and or LSU, and even last year, you know, we watched Tennessee a bunch. And those hostile environments that are created in college baseball, that's a big loss for a team to just all of a sudden say, hey, now we need to pack up and go try and head to home Omaha with a win on the road.
Yeah, and they're going to be going to TCU. TCU is going to be hosting that Super Regional now, so which is not an easy place to play. But I was reading that statement that they put out, and it was something like there was already things that were going on in the area. It's kind of the same thing with the Kentucky Regional, where they had all the concerts going on in Kentucky, to where they had to put everybody in dorms. I'll be interested to see now what happens. Well, they're not hosting a regional anymore, right? Because where's Kentucky going? Kentucky
is going to LSU.
Kentucky's going to LSU. Yeah. So they don't have to worry about the COVID dorms anymore. But yeah, but you go from hosting a regional to now being able to host a super regional because Arkansas gets eliminated in their regional by TCU, to now you have to travel all the way there. You're not going to have that many more fans. You're not going to have any fans really going to TCU. I'm sure they'll travel because it's a super regional and they're in the supers for the first time in program history, but there's going to be a lot more purple there than there is blue and white. So it's, I mean, you talk about it. You talked about it with Wake Forest. Would Alabama rather be hosting it in Tuscaloosa or going to Wake Forest?
Oh, I mean, obviously, Bama would rather be hosting. I mean, you look at Bama, that's a hard environment to play in. I think all SEC schools, boast tough environments to play in. But you're about to go, and I just read the tweet before we came on. The couch is already sold out. It's already sold out for the Super. And, you know, I look at all these North Carolina teams that, you know, went in, made some runs, and, you know, obviously Wake is still there. And again, like I said, North Carolina had seven teams in. And, you know, that's to me, that's the baseball capital of the world right there, the college baseball capital of the world right there, North Carolina. So, again, good crowds everywhere. But, again, Indiana State, too, you got to think about how low level of a mid-major they are. And no knock, right? But they play in the Missouri Valley Conference, right? It's like Campbell playing the Big South. It's going to be one team that just runs away with all of it. And you look at some of these, you know, opponents that Indiana State had during the regular season, and we talked about it last week, you know, eight of their 17 wins in conference play were games decided by two runs or less. So it's not like they're like an overwhelming offense, too. And the fact that you're not hosting now, that's going to be a dogfight for Indiana State. But we'll see how that goes. And I guess we'll move on to tonight's news, which gave us an opportunity since we had technical difficulties to watch the slaughtering that the Duke Blue Devils put on the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. I don't think anyone expected this to happen. But, I mean, Duke just turned on the Jets and never took them off. I mean, MJ Metz could be a preview for Young Lad of the Week right there. But, I mean, that dude came to play. And this Duke team, I mean, they proved that they belong. This is a Duke team that was near the bottom of the ACC last year. Nobody thought they stood a chance this year with all the good teams. The North Carolina, the Wake Forest, the Clemson, you know, Florida State's always in it. NC State's always in it. And they come out and, you know, you look at all these ACC teams, aside from the ones that are hosting, Wake Forest and Virginia, look, Clemson's out. North Carolina's out. NC State's out. So, you know, here come the Blue Devils. And, you know, they're going to play on the road, but just an absolute slaughtering of Coastal Carolina, who, quite frankly, I think kind of an underwhelming performance, too, for the Chanticleers. I mean, they lose to Ryder in the first game. And everyone's like, what the hell's Ryder doing there? Well, they end up beating Coastal, and, you know, tonight was a near shutout.
Yeah, and I mean, if the regionals had like a most an MVP for the regionals, I think MJ Metz gets it, because you hit more home runs in a single game than you have ACLs in your legs right now. So, I mean, Duke's offense, I thought, started to click a little bit in the ACC tournament. We saw what kind of team they could be. It just, we didn't know how much it would translate, especially in a regional that had Coastal Carolina, who we thought would kind of put it together, because they were there, you know, last year in a regional. We've seen them host regionals before and go on to the College World Series, but it's just Duke's offense, I didn't know, was capable of producing 12 run ball games at one point. But it was really their pitching, too, because you think about it, they had Gal Bellison come out of the pen and just basically shut down Coastal Carolina. And they also had Orshel III, which is a great name. And really, Beasley was the only person that gave up the runs, with three runs in his two innings. But they had a really good pitching plan for this Coastal Carolina team, who, I just looked at it, but now I forgot, I think only had five hits. Yeah, they only had five hits. They scored three runs the entire game. All three came in the ninth inning, when at that point it was 12-0. You're just trying to get outs any way you can. But you hold the Coastal Carolina team to five hits in a do or die, because I believe that was a winner take all game.
It was.
So what did they do? I forgot off the top of my head what the score was on Wednesday or on Sunday. It was, looking real quick, it was 8-6. So Coastal had to beat Duke twice to move on, and they still gave up six runs to Duke. So this is an offense that I just thought was clicking at the right time in the ACC tournament. And they obviously brought it to the regional, and we'll see now in the Supers. I think they have Oral Roberts now,
They have that weird – no, Oral Roberts has Oregon, so they'll have Virginia. So they're going to be facing a really good Virginia offense that dismantled East Carolina in their regional final.
Yeah, number one offense in the country that Virginia has, and also a top 10 pitching staff in the country as well. And by the way, MJ Metz, I mean, I'm just going to put it out there, and I'll pick someone else for the end of the show. But, I mean, he's my young lad of the week. I mean, how can he not be? He's playing – this is not the first time, by the way, that he's playing without an ACL. He's torn his ACL twice. And in the regional, he goes 8-for-18 with 4 bombs and 8 ribbies. I mean –
how many times in this regional did we just like turn on the TV and somebody had a multi-home run game?
A lot. A lot.
Trey Richardson had three. MJ Metz had 3 in a game.
And Danny Corona for Wake, like I said earlier. I mean, the list can for sure go on. So, I mean, it's a good start. But Duke, give them credit. You know, their season looked lost, too, in the middle of the year. I mean, Jonathan Santucci, who was one of the nation's leaders in strikeouts last year, goes down early in the year due to injury. And you're like, oh my God, like this is the ace of the staff. Like, what do we do? And, you know, they have picked up the slack there in Durham, and, you know, they're going to keep playing. So, I mean, I give credit to the Blue Devils too, man. You know, they run a really good program and had a down year last year after winning the ACC tournament 2 years ago. But, you know, hey, good for them. And they're one of the few teams still standing, and, you know, we'll shift it to another ACC team here. I mean, another disappointment in this regional was Clemson. I mean, they host. They sneak in. They win the ACC tournament. And you're downing teams like North Carolina. I know they didn't play Wake, but you're still, like, you're over Wake. You're over Duke. You're over all these teams. NC State. And you lose to Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte's ain't nothing impressive, but still, I mean, it's like George Mason getting in the regional. It's like or Tulane getting in the regional, except way better. It's like, how the hell are these guys here? But yeah, Clemson loses, and Tennessee, who I feel like, you know, came in, had a little chip on their shoulder because, you know, this is the first time in a while that they're not hosting. You know, everyone remembered the great atmosphere in Knoxville last year, and Tennessee shows their experience and they move on.
Yeah, and how would you like to be Clemson? You're one out away from beating Tennessee, going on to the regional final, and just sitting back and seeing what Tennessee and Charlotte are going to do, to now giving up the game-tying 3-run home run, and then having to go another 14 innings, or another 5 innings after that. I thought they just wasted a great performance from Greasy, and then you go into Saturday or Sunday, and just lay a complete egg against Charlotte and score 2 runs. I mean, Tennessee, I understand that's a dogfight. That was one of the best games of the entire regional. Probably the best game of the entire regional. Just the atmosphere that they had there, going back and forth, 2 powerhouse teams from the SEC and the ACC. But then you just go into Charlotte, you lose 3-2. So I'm trying to find the box score here as I'm speaking to you. But I thought them and Miami were kind of the most disappointing regional hosts so far, just because they had big expectations and Miami's offense just could not do anything against Texas. And then with Clemson, you win your first game against Lipscomb, and then you lose to Tennessee and you lose to Charlotte right away. You don't even beat Charlotte to be able to get that rematch with Tennessee, which I thought would have been a great game in its own right. And really, you got past Dolander. Dolander only went 4 innings in that Clemson game because of just a pitch count. And you kind of wasted an opportunity to move on to the Supers, and you would have faced, off the top of my head, I don't know, but you would have faced Southern Miss, which I think you kind of wasted, I don't ever want to say you wasted a season, but you won
definitely
ACC
could have been
tournament
better.
You're the number 5 seed. You're hosting. You would have hosted the Supers too. And you kind of just you wasted an opportunity to possibly get to Omaha.
With a lot of talent too. I mean, pretty disappointing. I'm glad you mentioned Miami as well. And that's another disappointing. You know, Clemson and Miami were the 2 teams in the ACC tournament final. And, you know, both those teams are out. I mean, we were singing the praises last week of Caden Grice and Yo-Yo Morales, and you know, both of them are going to be golfing at some point this week. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at in terms of summarizing the regionals that are pretty much now over. Really entertaining weekend. It's just reminds me of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. It's just a full-on slate of games. It's never ending. I mean, heck, you got to rain out. You get to watch a game at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, what's better? What's better? Just truly a fun weekend. But now, you know, things get a little bit more competitive because, you know, these super regionals are pretty quick, you know, 2 or 3, I believe it is. And, you know, that basically decides if you go to Omaha or not. And most of them are set.
Yeah, and I just turned it on now just to see, just to give some context. But Stanford is up 7-1 in the top of the ninth, and they got a strikeout right now. So man on first, two outs. You can, I guess, lightly pencil them in to playing in the Supers with Texas, against Texas and hosting again. So that means Texas would have to go all the way from Miami to California, which they probably have the most tough luck in that, but Texas's offense is going to be able to travel. But that should be a really good super regional. But then, you know, just going through them real quick, you got Wake Forest against Alabama, the 1-16 seeds going up against each other. Texas and Stanford, like I just said. Then you have number 5 LSU, number 12 Kentucky. Then you have the 2 seeds from their respective Auburn and Clemson regionals, and Tennessee and Southern Miss going against each other. Then on the other side, number 14 Indiana State is now, instead of hosting, going to go to TCU. And that's in, I forgot what part of Texas that is.
There's a lot of parts of Texas. Let's just call it somewhere in Texas.
There you go. They're going to go to TCU. And then you have Oral Roberts and Oregon. Oral Roberts is the only 3 seed in their regional to move on. Oregon was the number 2 seed, and they played Xavier because Xavier defeated Vandy 2-1. That game was crazy because in the ninth inning, you had Vandy with the chance to tie it, and then all of a sudden just an hour's worth of lightning delays happen, and then finally come back and you win 2-1. And then you have number 7 Virginia with Duke, the 2 seed from the Conway regional. And then last but certainly not least, number 2 Florida against number 15 South Carolina. So, and as I say that, Stanford just advanced to the super regionals, so now everything is completely set. So a lot of 2 seeds advancing, one 3 seed, but we talked about it last week. You kind of softly pencil the 1 seeds in, but you never know what's going to happen. And a lot of these regionals, it's like Xavier taking out of Vandy. Nobody saw it coming. A Duke just absolutely dismantling, you know, Coastal Carolina. Miami's offense just being non-existent in 2 of their 3 games that they played. So it's like we kind of lightly penciled in 1 seeds, but we're like, let's look for the 2 seeds, a couple of 2 seeds to come out of these regionals.
Yeah, that's why you play the games, because you never know what could happen. I mean, if you followed last year, you saw North Carolina played Arkansas, and North Carolina won the first game of the Super. They were hosting. And you're like, oh boy, like, Arkansas is going to get canned right now by UNC, a team that I don't even think was ranked last year. And Arkansas, what did Arkansas do? They came back and dismantled the Tar Heels. That's why, you know, you never know what can happen. That's why it's always so crazy. I mean, honestly, 2 years ago, did you really think Mississippi State was going to beat Vandy? No. With Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker on that roster and Carter Young, your shortstop, Dominic Keegan playing for him. No shot. So you never know what can happen. That's why this is so fun. I think the most intriguing regional, super regional, I should say, is going to be LSU and Kentucky. I'm super interested in that one because, you know, will LSU have enough pitching? And the offense now is a little bit of a question. I mean, we saw Wake Forest just thump everybody by scoring 15 or more in a game. LSU should be able to have that in their offense with the personnel that they have. And they didn't show it in the regionals. So can they do it against the same team for a couple of games here? I think that'll be a good matchup. Also, Florida, South Carolina, I think is flying under the radar here. These are two teams that just juggernauts of offenses, two SEC teams. I love how the SEC teams are always matching up in these. And it's a good time to be a fan of the SEC with just what you got here. So I think those two teams, considering, you know, we said it. Oh, Campbell runs into South Carolina. Well, everyone that was in the Florida regional just kept running into Florida. You know, so I think those are two that impresses me. And obviously Wake, just because I like watching them. And I think this super regional will prove if the Alabama pitching staff can't stop them, at least minimize them to, like, I don't know, let's say, shoot, 8 runs or less. I'm just trying to be nice here. I mean, the offense is just so good.
Alabama scored 9.
Right. I mean, I think they can. Yeah, against that pitching staff, I don't know. Like, if you can limit the offense, let's say you can limit the Wake Forest offense to 6 or less in a game. Right. And Wake still comes away and makes it to Omaha. This is going to be a telltale sign of whether or not Wake Forest is legitimately going to win Omaha. Like, if they go out there and they thump Alabama, I mean, I would bet half my bank account that Wake Forest is winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it could kind of turn it into a Tennessee situation last year where they had Notre Dame and everybody's like, oh, they're going to win in two. They're going to sweep them. They got they're the favorites to win in Omaha that year. We're watching it at a watch party, and we're kind of just like, Tennessee's in trouble here. And that's what happened. They ended up losing in 3 to Notre Dame, and it just caught everybody by surprise. And if you're Wake Forest, you don't want that to happen against Alabama. You're going to have Rhett Lauder go in game 1. That's a given. I don't think they're going to save him for game 2, just because if you win game 1, you have to win 1 of the next 2.
You still have Josh Hartle. You still have Sean Sullivan, who didn't even need to pitch in the regional. And, you know, Seth Keener as well. I mean, you know, however they formulate their pitching rotation, they're going to be totally fine. And now the fact that, you know, I bring up Adam Cicere a lot just because of personal, you know, ties to the fact that, you know, when I called Wake Forest High Point last year, he might hit the furthest baseball I've ever seen. Clear the batter's eye by a mile. So the fact that he's healthy is a big deal, because, like, it's either Adam Cicere's playing left, Danny Corona is DHing, they're both in the lineup, or Lucas Costello comes out of the lineup, who's their everyday two hitter. So, like, either way you put it, I mean, they just have weapons everywhere. I mean, that's how good this team is. And Justin Johnson, again, had a heck of a week. And this is a veteran guy that they brought in from Lafayette College. And he's really solidified that batting order, now hitting 5th in their lineup. And he provided a lot of pop. He was the best hitter out of any regional that we had all weekend long. So, you know, we'll see. But again, that's why you play the games, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and then another one that's going to intrigue me too is TCU and Indiana State. We saw Indiana State's pitching staff kind of neutralize North Carolina and Iowa's offense, but TCU found something in Arkansas. In those two games against Arkansas, they scored 18, and then they scored 14. So it's like, I think, and you're playing at home too, where you don't have to travel to Indiana. You don't have to go from Fayetteville to Indiana. You're going to be staying in a nice warm bed. You're going to probably be staying at home or in whatever bed that you were staying in throughout the season. So I think that's one of those regionals that's going to see TCU go back to Omaha for the first time in a while. And, you know, Indiana State, thanks for hosting the regional. Now you got to go to Texas. And here's a TCU team that just beat the number 2 team, or excuse me, the number 3 overall seed, by a combined score of a billion to 5. Here you go. Thanks for playing.
It's actually going to be in Fort Worth, Texas. Look that up while we had a second. But
Fort Worth. I knew it was like Fort Worth or Dallas, or
it was either that, Corpus Christi. Place. I mean, whatever town, they're all somehow together. But no, I mean, what we really are failing to do is give Indiana State the credit that they deserve. I mean, they were 5th in the country in team ERA. And you look at some of the teams that they were ahead of. I mean, that's, you know, 70% more than that of the teams that made it to the postseason. So, I mean, they deserve to be here. Like, you know, I may undermine them because they play in the Missouri Valley, but at the same time, I mean, fifth in the nation in ERA. They beat Iowa. They beat North Carolina, who was ranked. So, you know, they deserve to be here. But, I mean, you know, Trey Richardson, you know, I know he's your preview for Young Lad of the Week, and rightfully so. I mean, you get a kid who hits two grand slams in this back-to-back innings. Your offense is cooking. And it's not only Trey Richardson. It's because guys are getting on base in front of him. So, you know, there's another stat that I'm sure you're going to pull when you announce your Young Lad of the Week. But, yeah, this TCU team, pretty superb offensively. So, you know, the question is, can this Indiana State pitching staff hold them at bay? And, you know, the two offenses that the Sycamores did hold at bay, Iowa, North Carolina, impressive so far. So can they keep it up?
Yeah, but would you say, just to play devil's advocate here, would you say that those are their two most impressive wins of the season that came in the regional? Obviously, they're the two wins that mattered because it got you to a super regional. But, you know, the Missouri Valley Conference, you talk about it. I know about it just because I played summer ball in that area, so I kind of know the competition that's around there. It's very hard to say you have the fifth best ERA when you're playing in a conference like that. Not to diminish anything that those kids are doing, but it's a – I think it's hard to say it's a mid-major. I would say it's a lower mid-major conference.
Oh, we are really bashing the Missouri Valley Conference. And, I agree with you. I mean, I don't want to do it either.
Midnight,
but,
so, yeah. You know, in my time at least. So now things are going to get a little weird as far as questions and the quote-unquote bashing of college conferences.
Yeah, I kind of want to pull up the Missouri Valley standings just to see what the teams did. But let's just go through Indiana State's schedule real quick. So they played Iowa at the beginning of the year and lost in extras. I'm just looking at some teams that are notable. Florida Gulf Coast, who was ranked at one point. They did beat them 8-7. They lost to Miami. They got swept by Northeastern. They got swept by Kentucky. So those are teams right there. I mean, you look at those two, three teams that I just mentioned, you know, Northeastern in a regional, Kentucky still playing, Miami in a regional hosted, and Florida Gulf Coast, I mean, is an impressive win. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, I'm looking at some of these other matchups too. Like,
what were the scores though for that Kentucky, for those Kentucky and Miami games?
So 4-2 loss, 5-4 loss. 7-6 loss. So, I mean, they're in these games, right? Northeastern, too. Yeah. I mean, Northeastern, too. 9-5 loss, 15-10 loss, 8-7 loss in extras. And then they lost to Miami 9-3. And also, Florida Gulf Coast, their win against them was only 8-7. Now, you lose a doubleheader against Michigan State, who was awful this year. Indiana played in a regional. You lose to them 15-5. Again, that's another opponent. They did shut out Indiana at a point this year too. They beat them 4-0. So there's that for you. They did beat Vanderbilt 10-2. I mean, you look at some of these teams that they've beaten and you're like, okay, like
Vandy. I'm
yeah, sure like Vandy, what? Vandy, like when they were ranked number 4, Vandy.
Are we sure that's not like a Vanderbilt that's in like California that has the same name? That,
you know, I really wanted to double check that, but the logo looks all too familiar. And now I'm pulling up the box score and Enrique Bradfield's in it. So, yeah, I guess that's the
which
real
he took name. He took a little bit of a spill this last weekend. I was just glad he was okay.
He did. So let's go through the Missouri Valley Conference because, you know, now we're on the topic of the Missouri Valley. And, you know, if you're a fan of the Missouri Valley out there and you hate us, you know what? Sorry, not sorry, right? We're just trying to be provide you the content that's correct. So Indiana State goes 45-15, 24-3 in conference. The next best team had 12 less wins than them overall. That was Missouri State. Let me do a little quick math here. Okay, so only 5 out of the 10 teams in this conference finished above 500 in conference play. And you look at some of the teams Missouri State was in second. Evansville, Southern Illinois, Murray State, Illinois Chicago, Belmont, Valparaiso, Illinois State, and Bradley.
Oh, don't sleep on Bradley. Bradley.
I mean, don't say anything about Bradley. I mean, they play at the ballpark that I call games in, man. I mean, even though they went a whopping 7-20 in conference play, I mean, don't sleep on the Braves of Bradley. But no, I mean, you're right, though. It's like kind of like Campbell in a way, where you dominate the Big South and you put up the nation's best run scoring numbers. Does that play in a regional? And the answer for Campbell this year was no. Now, Indiana State, look, they've played Iowa once before this year. So when you get them in a regional, you kind of, you know what to expect. I mean, North Carolina, you know, without Vance Honeycutt, I mean, I honestly think that that outcome could have been a little different. I'm sorry. I really do. Like, I just love the offense that North Carolina has. They just simply weren't ready to play in this regional. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're giving Indiana State a tough time here. You know, it'd be pretty cool to see them prove us wrong. I don't think they're gonna. But again, it could be one of those teams where it's like, you know, keep riding us off. That's why you play these games.
Yeah, I mean, look what happened with Ole Miss last year. I know they're an SEC team, but they were the very last team to get in. And everybody's like, oh, they're going to lose the regional. Oh, they'll lose the Supers. Oh, they'll go 0-2 in Omaha. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, or somehow they win Omaha. And now look at them. They're not even in the playoffs anymore or in the tournament. So I guess they kind of did prove us right in a way. But, I mean, I really don't want to bash on Missouri Valley and their conference, but I don't know. Something is just like, you can't be the number 5 team in ERA when you're facing guys that go 7-20 in your conference and that, you know, are below 500 overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very valid point. You know, I'm just trying to look for current events here. I mean, teams do have match. I look at the Florida Panthers right now. I know they're down 2-0 in the Stanley Cup final, but they were the last team to get in the playoffs. So, you know, there's always one team that makes a magical run. I mean, right now it's Indiana State. You know, I mean, that TCU offense is pretty darn good. So, yeah, I'm even more fired up for that regional because we've just spent the last 10 minutes not only bashing the Missouri Valley Conference, but actually getting to know who actually plays in the Missouri Valley Conference, because outside of Indiana State, and at least for me, for, you know, Bradley, I don't know who else is in the conference. So, you know,
Missouri State kind of makes sense because it's called the Missouri Valley. So,
yeah, you know, that's kind of I guess. But hey, you know, if you threw it out there last week, hey, what conference does Missouri State play in? I don't know. If I asked you last week what conference does Missouri State play in, would you know the answer to it?
You know what? I probably would have started, all honesty, with the Sun Belt. I would have been like, Sun Belt? Like Conference USA? So, we're having a lot of technical difficulties here. That's why
we were rolling. We were rolling. We were great. We were doing fantastic.
And then,
boom. You said something about Sunbelt, and you slid out of the screen. And I was like, oh, boy.
I really hope that's saved. Or it's kind of just going to be, you know, we don't have an episode this week.
Listen. It's the magic. It's the magic of editing.
Yeah, so technical difficulties, apologize.
Let's just get into this before we have another difficulty with something, because now it was internet connection on my end. I'm looking at my Wi-Fi and it's perfectly fine, so I have no idea what happened. But let's go through these regionals real quick and pick some winners and some losers. Let's start with number one Wake Forest, number 16 Alabama. I know we could say a light pencil, but are we using pen on Wake Forest?
Let's do one less than pen, but one more than pencil. If you ever took a test in middle school or high school and used one of these, it's a number two Ticonderoga, I believe it was called, pen. You have to pen it in on a Scantron. Let's Scantron in Wake Forest, which means color in the dot well enough to where it'll scan on a Scantron, right? That we can lock it in with the Demon Deacons going to Omaha. I just really don't see Alabama. They might not even win a game, which is sad because I like Bama. I got a couple buddies on Bama. Don't get me wrong, but like, you know, it's just tough. I mean, you're going Louder game one, probably Hartle game two. And you got to think too, like Michael Massey was barely used. Camden Manassie was barely used. Like all these guys are just salivating to get action in the pen. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know how you stop a team that averaged 16 runs per game. They outscored their opponents 48-7. You just say that number to somebody, you're like, oh, that's somebody's like season. It's like, no, that's what somebody did in three games. So, I think I'm putting Wake in pencil, and I'm putting Wake in pen, FOR in pen, and then I'll put the EST in pencil just in case.
Fair.
But I think Wake Forest, I don't know if they dismantle Alabama, but I have them winning against Alabama. Okay, so number eight, Stanford against the two seed from their Coral Gables regional, Texas.
Oh, you know, this is a hard one. I mean, Stanford has been in this position a lot in the last few years. I mean, you know, very good, very solid. I mean, Texas surprised a lot of people. I'm gonna go with Texas here. I mean, Stanford, the last couple of years has been in a super, and they just haven't gotten over the hump. And I haven't seen this year a case where it's like, okay, like, yeah, they're ready to make that next leap into Omaha. I think they got a great team. Don't get me wrong. I think it'll be close, but. You know, I think Texas, just like they stole their regional, you know, this weekend, I think they'll do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got Texas too. I think just Thomas and Powell at the top of their lineup. I know they only went 1-for-5, or really 2-for-10 against Miami combined, but I think those are two really good table setters at the top of a really good Texas lineup. And then just their pitching staff as a whole. When you can just throw somebody out there for 130 pitches and they get a complete game for you, I think that's something that's going to help a lot in a super regional where if you win game one, it's a lot easier to win the series than having to come back from down 0-1. So I think Texas moves on. Stanford, I think, has good pitching, but I don't know if they have pitching. I don't know if they have enough pitching to stop Texas.
Yeah, can agree with that for sure.
So now, number 5, LSU, and number 12, Kentucky.
I would put this one down as probably the super of the weekend. And this one's hard for me. But I think Kentucky's offense has an opportunity here to get to the lack of LSU pitching. I think they do. So, you know, in this kind of downward spiral that the Tigers have gone in, even though it doesn't seem like they have, they really have, with being the number one team for most of the year. So I'm going to go Kentucky on this one, just because, you know, somebody's got to break this spell that LSU's on here. I mean, they just can't survive this long and have the pitching staff that they do, to me, at least, you know.
I think it's either that or, you know, LSU's going to go to Omaha and get dismantled by somebody because they don't have enough pitching outside of Skeens. So I'm going Kentucky here solely off the fact that, you know, LSU's offense was not all that great. And, you know, these are two SEC teams, both very familiar with each other. But right now, LSU doesn't have the pitching.
Yeah, and I want to pick Kentucky too, but something just tells me that LSU is going to be able to find it for two games. They just need to get just one more win that Skeens doesn't throw in. And I think they do. I think they can make it to Omaha, but I don't know. I think they have the offense to go to Omaha. They got Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, Trey Morgan. They have the offense to get there. They have the defense to get there. It's just that their pitching staff scares me, especially in the bullpen. When you got guys that you have to throw out there in a winner-take-all game that have above a 4 ERA, that scares me. But just to kind of play devil's advocate between both of us so we're not having the same picks, and just because I think LSU can turn it on, at least offensively, and just find a way to get enough outs in that second game to win. I think it goes three games, but I think LSU finds a way to win.
The crazy thing is that Skeens basically is a lock for a win if he can go seven innings or more. If Skeens goes seven innings or more, LSU's winning that game. No questions asked. But on the off chance Skeens finally does get touched, which is possible because he hasn't really been touched all year, you know, it's got to break at some point. I mean, I don't think it is because we're looking at the number two pick in the draft. So, you know, could this be an opportunity where, you know, can Kentucky touch Skeens? If Kentucky can and only force him to go, you know, six innings, then you got a problem on your hands. But also, Skeens a dog. He's a dog. Like, he's going to go out there. He threw 116 pitches his first time. Heck, if they need him to throw 130, he'll throw 130. Because yeah, I bet you in the back of his mind, he knows that if he doesn't go at least seven or eight innings, that his team not only is not winning that game, but they're not moving on.
Yeah, I will throw a little caveat. If Kentucky finds a way to win the game that Skeens throws in, I think they could very well sweep the Supers. Because now you're kind of having to have a makeshift bullpen game kind of thing that LSU's got to do just to get some outs and to keep Kentucky from scoring five, six, seven, eight runs. So I think if LSU can win game one, it's going to go three games, and they'll find a way to win in game three. If Kentucky somehow beats Skeens in game one, we could be seeing a sweep and then talking about, you know, what the heck happened to LSU. Is it the best thing to go into the portal and get all your players like Tommy White, like Paul Skeens? I know you had success in the regular season. You were number one at one point, but is that going to translate into, you know, postseason success? I think we have one of those conversations if Kentucky is able to win on Friday.
Yeah, it could be a preview of what we could talk about next week. I mean, heck, you know, let's just compare. You know, the whole talk about Wake Forest has been, you know, obviously the offense and the pitching, but the type of program that Tom Walter has built with guys who have been there. You know, Brock Wilkins been there since his freshman year. Nick Kurtz has been there since his freshman year. Same with Rhett Lauder. Same with Josh Hartle. Same with Sean Sullivan. Tommy Hawk. I mean, all these core guys have been there since their freshman year, and Jay Johnson's kind of just plucking. You know, this could be a future topic of conversation in our next episode if LSU does win. So, you know, I'm kind of excited to see what happens.
So now moving on, Tennessee and Southern Miss. Real quick, I'm sure you're going to dive in deeper into it. I think Tennessee is just too good. I think Dolander game one is just going to dominate. I know he didn't really do that well against Clemson. I think he's going to turn it on, though, because he's trying to get, you know, his draft stock to go up, because I think Lauder passed him as the number two college pitcher in this draft. But I think you got Dolander. You have a really good bullpen. It's a lot different than what LSU is. I actually trust their pitching a lot more than LSU's. And I don't think Southern Miss has the offense to keep up with Tennessee's.
And you got to think Tony V and some of the veterans on that Tennessee team are pissed off that they lost last year, because that team, you know, they should have been in. Like, we were talking about it last year. Like, they should have been in, and they weren't. So, look, like, you know, they're good, but, you know, do they have the pedigree that Tennessee has? I don't think so.
And I believe Tennessee will be hosting that Super Regional as well, so they'll you'll be getting that really good environment that you got in Knoxville, same as last year. And I'm sure that a couple of guys that were on Tennessee's team last year is trying to enact revenge on Southern Miss. And, you know, no knock on Southern Miss, but Notre Dame is a better team than what Southern Miss is, especially last year going into that Super Regional.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that you said that they're hosting, whole different ball game. I mean, I don't know about you. Knoxville's a place where, like, if I had a ticket to go see a Super Regional in Knoxville, I don't care where I am, I'm going. Like, that's a heck of an atmosphere. I mean, you're stepping into that cauldron. I mean, LSU is a different ball game, but there's a difference. The LSU people are nice. They're from Louisiana. They're like sweet talking and give you good hospitality. Like, these Tennessee fans, man, like they're ruthless, you know, and that's what I like. I like that kind of environment. So, you know, you're going into that kind of environment, I mean, good luck. I mean, that place is going to be full to capacity. So that's going to be exciting to watch too, just because when that place is full, I mean, I really don't think there's another college venue like it.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere where, you know, or for who that would, or what am I trying to say? I saw something on Twitter that said who was hosting the regionals for everything, and I think it was Tennessee, just because they were in the number 5 seeds regional with Clemson, and Southern Miss was in the number 13 seeds regional in Auburn. So I think because they were in the higher seeded regional, they would host. But I could be wrong. But I think they're hosting. I think Tennessee hosts, and if we had more time, I would look at look over there, and it doesn't tell me on NCAA.com who's hosting, which is what I'm looking at this on. So now, number 14, Indiana State and TCU. I know we kind of alluded to this a little earlier in the episode, but I think their offense found something. I think Trey Richardson found something after having 2 home runs in the regular season. He hits 3 in one game, including 2 grand slams. I mean, I'll put it out there. He's already my player, my young lad of the week. But I think TCU moves on.
Yeah, I mean, we were demising the Missouri Valley Conference, you know, 10 minutes ago. So I think it'd be pretty wrong of me to pick against Indiana State. And you know what? Just for the sake of sanity and for the sake of the content of this podcast, I really hope Indiana State puts up some kind of fight, because I would love to come back on here next week and do one of 2 things. 1, prove to everyone that we were right. Or 2, you know, get crap talk to us about how we were demising the Missouri Valley Conference and that team's going to Omaha. So I personally think TCU's get an advance. But you know what? If Missouri Valley, they're not even called the Missouri Valley. It's crazy. If Indiana State wants to put up a good fight and make it to Omaha, you know what? We'll be glad to talk about it again.
Yeah, we could be talking about them next week when they're, you know, going into Omaha and who they're facing round 1 and what that looks like. But TCU's offense is good. They put up 18 and 14 against Arkansas, which everybody was like, oh, they got the best pitching staff in the country behind Wake Forest. So who knows? Maybe like you said, we're eating our words next week.
Could be.
But for the sake of time, because it is 12:30 my time, and we've already been talking for about a little over an hour now, and we've been saying technical difficulties, but we kind of had to restart this little bit, and we're 15 minutes into this recording. I really hope the first part of it recorded, because if not, then this part's all for naught. But moving on, Oral Roberts against Oregon, and that will be in Eugene for that regional.
Far trip. I think, you know, Oral Roberts is a nice little story going on. Seems like everything in Oral Roberts athletics has had a nice little story over the last couple of years. But I think, you know,
think Oregon's got something here. The fact that they're hosting. I mean, anytime you got to go up to that part of the country, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Oregon. I've never been personally. But that just feels like a trek. It's like, you know, California's one thing to go out west. But if my mother came to me and be like, hey, we're going to Oregon, I just kind of feel pretty miserable. You know? And I bet you Oregon fans are probably really passionate up there. So I'm going with the Ducks.
Well, they only get like, what is it, 70 days of sunshine a year? So it could be a little gloomy there for the Oral Roberts. Are they the Eagles?
I don't know what the heck they are, to be honest with you.
I'm trying to look at their mascot. I think it's the Oral Roberts Golden Eagles. But hey, maybe they take a page out of their basketball team and they slay a big dragon like Oregon, and we're talking about Indiana State versus Oral Roberts in game one of Omaha.
If that happens, oh my goodness. That'll be something. Indiana State against Oral Roberts, like, I mean, there's just no way. There's no way. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year that Indiana State and Oral Roberts would be playing in Omaha, we said you're nuts. And I also would have bet like $3,000 on the fact that that wouldn't happen.
What if you had, I know this is a what if, but what if you had Southern Miss, Indiana State, and Oral Roberts?
I'll tell you what, the NCAA.
TCU and Tennessee.
I'll tell you what, the NCAA's TV ratings are going to go down.
That, do you think Oral Roberts versus like Southern Miss or Indiana State would be the lowest watched NCAA baseball game?
And I love watching, especially in Omaha, but I don't even know if I'd watch that, to be honest with you. Because I feel like, you know, every team, like, there's a good group of players that you can follow, right? Even in mid-majors. But Oral Roberts, I mean, I can't name a player on Oral Roberts. I'm sorry. I know we're like a half college baseball podcast, but I can't name a player on Oral Roberts. I can't. I just can't.
I didn't know Oral Roberts was in Oklahoma until I was listening on the radio to the Oklahoma State or the Tennessee Florida State softball game, and they were talking about Oral Roberts because the College World Series for softball is in Oklahoma. I didn't even know that.
Like, what town is Oral Roberts in? Like, where do you come up with the idea? If that town's not named Oral Roberts, like, where do you come up with the idea? Yeah, let's name our institution Oral Roberts. Like, what is it, a dental school? Like, I don't know. Like, we've just never heard of him.
Somebody.
It's got to be some sort of – it's got to be like a – it's got to be a dental school.
We'll get our best people on that, but moving on. So, wait, you have Oregon, right?
Yeah.
I have Oregon, too. Virginia and Duke, real quick. Cool. Virginia offense looked amazing against East Carolina and Army. I mean, Army, thanks for playing your regular season. You're going to be in a regional. Congratulations. Here, you have Virginia and East Carolina and Oklahoma. Good luck.
Yeah, I just think Virginia's offense, and I think their whole team, I mean, they're right up there with the most complete team, just like Wake Forest, in my opinion. I just think Virginia's too much to handle. Like, you know, Coastal, yeah, they were ranked 10th in the country, but, you know, we saw teams beat them. You know, Duke gave it to them tonight. I just think Virginia's just a whole different ballgame. I mean, this is the nation's best offense. This is one of the nation's best pitching staffs. And, you know, if you're Duke, also, like, let's be honest, MJ Metz, great run, but you banged up. Best starting pitcher, been out half the year. You know, I don't know if they have this run in them. I will say, you know, Duke's pen looked really good tonight. But can they beat a team like Virginia with the best offense in the country? And to be honest with you, you know, I don't know. When you got two guys in Kyle Teal and Jake Geloff who are two of the top 30 draft prospects going right now, you know, it's just, I just don't think so. You know, I think it's the Hoos that are going to win.
Yeah. And the last time we saw Duke in a position like this against a perennial, you know, championship contender was against Vanderbilt in 2019, where they took them to three games. They won game one, and then they get no hit by Kumar Rocker in game two. And was that Jack Leiter that pitched game three? Did he come out of the pen?
Yeah, so it was one of those two.
So it was something like that, but I know I remember Kumar Rocker getting that no hitter. It was like 19 strikeouts and just dominating. And then after that, you just knew Duke was done. So we've seen Duke in this position before. It's just, is it going to be the same thing with Campbell, where they're inexperienced in this type of situation, where Virginia's, I think this is their 12th Supers that they've been to as a program. And I know these kids that are playing now haven't been there for 12 years or the 12 times that they've gone. But there's something to say about a program and a coaching staff that knows what it takes to win in the Supers, whereas Duke, They've only been one other time. They've been to a bunch of regionals. They know what it is to play in regionals, but they don't know what it is to play in Supers. And you have to go to Charlottesville, which they've done it in the regular season because it's another ACC team, but it's very hard to win in Charlottesville.
It is. I mean, that's a tough place to play too. And, you know, the Duke fans will come out, like, they'll travel well. That's not a far drive at all. I think it's going to be one of those things where it's another local rivalry, which will be really cool. I think the crowd's going to be pretty mixed. It'll be interesting to see what it's like there. It'll be a cool environment, but I think Virginia ultimately just is just too good, too much to handle.
It is nice, though. I think you're an ACC guy. I'm an ACC guy just because I support Florida State and everything, but it'll be nice to at least have an ACC team, you know, in Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the SEC teams that are squaring off right now. I mean, you're like, where's the ACC matchup? And here we have it. You know, I mean, we had NC State in it 2 years ago, and, you know, we were kind of mad that it got cut short due to COVID for them. And yeah, I mean, you know, a couple ACC teams still rolling. It's amazing, all the ACC teams. You look at the North Carolina, you look at Clemson, you look at Miami, and look at the teams that are still standing. Put away Wake for a second. Virginia, obviously, yeah, they looked great, but Duke. I mean, of those teams, North Carolina, Clemson, and Duke, I mean, of those three, I think Duke's probably last on the list to still stand, and they are, so you got to give them credit.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we can have Wake Forest in, so we can have two ACC teams, but in the off chance that they do lose, just having a ACC team to represent the conference is nice. So now moving on to the last one, you got Florida and South Carolina, the 2 versus 15. I've been on record saying I think Florida is one of the most complete teams in the country, right after Wake Forest. So I think they handle this South Carolina team, who kind of handled everybody in their regional with Campbell and NC State, but I think Florida's offense is going to be too much for South Carolina. I think they're going to put up a lot of runs, and I think it's going to be a sweep. I would not be surprised if, you know, 7-2, 10-3 type of sweep. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to agree with you here. I mean, I want to say South Carolina, but I'm looking at the teams that South Carolina played in their regional. I mean, Campbell, inexperienced, NC State, you know, realistically, like I said last episode, I really think they should have been there. And Central Connecticut is Central Connecticut, you know, like, I think the hand that they were drawn made it easy for the Gamecocks, but now it's a whole different ballgame going to play Florida. Like you said, the offense is just insane. I mean, Wyatt Langford, I mean, everyone talks about Jack Caglione leading the nation in homers, but Wyatt Langford, I mean, he's getting drafted top 10. Like, this is a guy who not enough people are talking about, really, because everyone's focused on Jack and his two-way abilities. So yeah, I mean, juggernaut of an offensive Florida, and I agree with you. I think it's just too much to handle. It's kind of a similar situation like we got with Virginia and Duke.
Yeah, so it's gonna be very interesting. I think, I don't know about you, but I think my eyes are going to be glued to Tennessee and Southern Miss just because they're going to be playing in Knoxville. And that atmosphere is just going to be absolutely electric. And then I think it's going to kind of, you know, if I could, I think I would put one eye on Tennessee, Southern Miss, the other eye on LSU, Kentucky, just because I think that's going to be a very interesting regional as well. But what says you?
Well, now because we've really talked about it so much, I mean, I got to keep an eye on TCU and Indiana State just because I really want to see, you know, I want to see something here that can either prove us right or prove us really, really wrong. So I'm definitely keeping an eye on that. Virginia Duke, I think, is going to be an absolute electric factory. I don't know how close the games are going to be. Like, for example, I would say Wake all day, and I will watch Wake because I legitimately, like, you know, I could say I'm a Wake Forest, you know. Watch the first six innings, and if they're up 12 to nothing, it's like, okay, they got this in the bag, whatever. We get the gist. You know, Virginia and Duke, I think, is going to be a really close matchup. So I'd say LSU for sure, and then Duke and Virginia are my two to keep an eye on.
Definitely going to be interesting. Definitely going to keep an eye on it. So now let's get into our young lads of the week. We kind of hinted at it throughout the, you know, the episode and everything. I'm just going to go out there and say it's Trey Richardson for me. I mean, I could say MJ Metz maybe as an honorable mention, but Trey Richardson had two home runs the entire regular season, hits three home runs in one game, including grand slams and back-to-back innings, almost pulled the Fernando Tatis Sr. on nice. Arkansas, and they just go absolute ballistic. 11 RBIs, three home runs, two grand slams. I mean, just nothing better than that. And I think he homered again today. I have to look, but I think he homered. Did they play today or did they play? No, they did play today because everything got pushed back. And now I'm looking. I don't remember. I know he grounded out to second to score a run. And he did homer. He homered to center to make it 11-4.
Yes.
So that's four home runs against Arkansas. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I mean, MJ Metz, I think I kind of want to make two here because, I mean, MJ Metz has to be in the conversation. I mean, what he's doing on one knee and three homers in one game is nuts. But I got to go with, you know, who I said earlier in the episode is probably the best hitter of the postseason thus far. And it's Justin Johnson for me. You know, people look at Brock Wilkin, people look at Nick Kurtz, they look at Tommy Hawk, but not enough people are looking at what Justin Johnson's done. You know, he went 7-for-15 in the regional in three games, two homers in that first game against George Mason with six RBIs. In total, he had, 13 RBIs over the three games in the Winston-Salem regional. I mean, this is a guy who quietly is second on the team in RBIs with 74 and has 15 bombs, and nobody's talking about him. So, you know, Tom Walter, who likes building a program, this is one of those guys that he plucked from the transfer portal from a no-name school in Lafayette College, and he comes in, and he's been, I mean, he has been electric, hitting either in the two-hole or in the five or in the six-hole, wherever they have him. He's been great. So Justin Johnson is my young lad of the week.
And definitely two other people that we can see move on. We'll see MJ Metz in his super regional. We'll say Trey Richardson in his, and we'll be definitely looking forward to watching those guys play throughout the series. We made our predictions, and hopefully we're coming back on Monday with some good stories to tell about these regionals that we saw.
Yeah, and who knows if the Missouri Valley Conference will come back to bite us, but yeah, we will see. But until then, I mean, that'll do it here for Episode 6 of the Young Lads Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, and we hope you are, you know, give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever the hell you got to do to keep up with us, please do it. We appreciate it. And yeah, that'll do it for us here on this late Monday for me, now Tuesday morning early for you. I'm Harris.
And I'm Peter DeFee, and we will have this podcast up probably about 8 o'clock Tuesday night, so be on the lookout for that, and we'll be back talking to you guys again next Monday. We'll be talking to you guys next Monday after, as I was trying to say, some good super regional action. We'll be showcasing, I should say, forecasting what we think is going to happen in Omaha. But Harris, great to talk to you as always, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, sir. Same to you.